Hello and welcome to the UK Personal Finance Show with Phil Anderson, the podcast designed to give you all the financial advice you'll ever need. This is episode 170, where in a moment we look at the most recent budget and what that might mean for you. That's in just a second, as I say. Please bear in mind, if you have a general financial query, you're in the right place because we have an enormous resource of free advice right here. And you can access it all simply through delving into our back catalogue of shows, because in our programmes to date, we featured loads of stuff. Mortgages, investing, wills and powers of attorney, and heaps more. You name it, we've done it pretty much. And last time we chatted financial planning for the end of the tax year. Find the UK Personal Finance Show with Phil Anderson on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts, and you'll get us there. Like I say, an enormous resource, all available for free. Find our previous shows after listening to this one and have a binge on what you need. While you're there, if you could rate and review us, for instance, you could tell us what we need to address to help you out and follow the show. And then that way, you'll get that episode when we record it next time. I'm John Ellis, and he is the star of our show, Phil Anderson. Hi, Phil.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good, thank you. So the spring budget, let's dive straight in. As a general rule of thumb, I never trust people who look like Jeremy Hunt because he's too shiny, like he's made of plasticine. It's sort of like a Wallace and Gromit character. I don't instinctively warm to him. And what you find after any budget is that on balance, it's good for some and not for others. Phil's job here is to cut through the bluster and find out whether or not when we break it down, it's actually good for you. Right, Phil, shall we start with the OBR forecast? First of all, what does OBR stand for and what does it forecast?
Yeah, usually they tend to start the budget with that. OBR, it stands for Office for Budget Responsibility. Basically, it's an independent watchdog in the UK, and they kind of look at the public finances. So they would produce sort of forecasts, different analysis, various reports on the economy, tax, spending, borrowing. That's the sort of thing that they look at. During his speech, the Chancellor, he declared that the economy had turned the corner on inflation, and he was also saying that we'll soon turn the corner on growth as well. So he unveiled his latest sort of economic projections, and these were produced by the Office for Budget Responsibility, or OBR. He also went on to say that the OBR figures showed that the rate of inflation was falling below the Bank of England's 2% target level, and he thought that would happen in the next few months' time. He also noted that it was nearly a year earlier than the original kind of OBR sort of forecasts from the autumn time, and he said that this was, like, it had happened not by accident, but due to sound money policies. So that was kind of like the start of the budget, going through the OBR stuff.
Yeah, and the trustworthiness of the OBR is the fact that they are independent, and therefore they're not, you know, sort of another arm of the government saying, oh yeah, it's all brilliant. I suppose it's all very well to tell us things are improving and they're ahead of schedule, but unless we feel it in our pockets or actually see it working, we're less inclined to believe it. I don't know what it's like where you are, but I work in Glasgow during the week, and there are signs of poverty absolutely everywhere. So are there any measures in this budget designed to help with the cost of living?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that he'd also mentioned as well was that, like, they think that there's going to be a period of economic growth over the next few while. So that would be good for the country. In terms of cost of living, we've got there, he's announced like a series of measures designed to help families deal with the cost of living sort of pressures. And these include an extension to what's called the Household Support Fund. So that's going to remain at current levels for a further 6 months. He's also maintaining the temporary 5p cut on fuel duty and also freezing it for another 12 months as well. So that's designed to try and help people on a sort of day-to-day basis. There's an extension of the freeze and alcohol duty until February 2025. It's funny, I saw a comment from someone on LinkedIn the other day, and they were sort of bemoaning the fact that they were saying, yeah, they've said it's frozen, but the tax on alcohol is quite high in comparison to certain other countries. So but that would be welcome for a lot of people as well. And there's also an extension and the repayment period for new budget and advance loans from 12 months to 24 months. And they've also abolished there's a £90 charge for debt relief orders. So they're doing a few things there to try and help with the sort of cost of living measures.
That would be the ultimate good news, bad news scenario, wouldn't it? The price of a pint stays the same. Celebrate by having one with the guy who announced it.
A man who has nothing in common with anyone. Now, here's where it always gets interesting, I think. And this is why running a financial podcast is so rewarding, because although some things remain mostly the same over time, governments will change regulations or aspects of financial products, or they maybe even introduce something entirely new. As we come round to personal taxation, savings and pensions, it's a big one, this. So what's new and significant in this world, Phil? The headline was national insurance, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was probably the biggest thing in the budget. I mean, following previous changes to national insurance contributions from January 2024, the government's now announced further changes to take effect from this April. So the main rate of employee national insurance, it's going to be cut by 2 pence on the pound. So it's currently 10%, and that'll go down to 8%, which when combined with the 2 pence cut that took effect in January, they estimate that that'll save the average salaried worker around £900 a year, is what they're saying there. There's going to be a further 2 pence cut from the main rate of self-employed national insurance, and that's on top of the 1p cut that was announced at the autumn statement. So this means that from the 6th of April this year, the main rate of Class 4 national insurance for the self-employed, it will reduce from 9% to 6%. So with that two things, they reckon that will save the average self-employed person around £650 a year. So probably the biggest sort of giveaway, you would say, in the budget. I mean, they're, like you say, there's certain things impact different people, but one of the big sort of things was the national insurance cuts there.
There was also a move in child benefit, wasn't there?
Yeah, child benefit. So at the minute, child benefit is based on if one in the family earns over 50,000, you don't get that, but you could have two people earning, say, 48,000 each, and they would get it. So there's changes there to try and, they said to try and remove unfairness in the system, but basically child benefit, it's going to be based on household income rather than individual income. And that's from April 2026. So that's still a wee bit away. From April 24, the threshold, or it's called a high income child benefit charge, it's going to be raised to 60,000 from 50,000. And they reckon that'll take 170,000 families out of paying this charge. One thing I would say from a good financial planning point of view is, if you're just above that level, let's say you were earning 51 or 52,000 a year, one of the things you can do is make additional pension contributions. Mm. And by doing that, you can sometimes get that benefits back. So that's where sort of good financial planning can come in as well. So going back to the changes, the rate of the change, it'll also be halved. So the child benefit isn't lost in full until the individual earns 80,000 per annum. But the government estimates that nearly 500,000 families will gain an average of 1,260 in the 2024-25 tax year as a result of these changes.
Okay. Now, here's where it gets fun, I think. The government's announced two new saving products, haven't they?
Yeah, we a couple of new things that came out. So first of all, we've got, it's called our new, it's not called a new ISA, but it's called the British ISA. So with this, you've got an extra £5,000 annual allowance in addition to your existing ISA allowance. So that means you can pay an extra £5,000 in. Any gains are tax-free. But with this, it's got to be invested in UK-focused assets. So that was one of the changes, this British ISA that he announced. The other thing is what's called a British savings bond. Now, that's going to be delivered through National Savings and Investments, and that comes in April 2024. So that's going to offer a guaranteed interest rate fixed for 3 years. So a couple of changes on the savings side there.
So that £5,000 roof you're talking about in the new ISA, that's in addition to the £20,000 annual allowance in existing ISAs. Or was there any change to the existing ISAs in this budget?
Yeah, the ISA allowance, it remains at 20,000. However, as you say, you've then got that British ISA on top where you can have a further £5,000 allowance. The junior ISAs, the allowance on that, it remains at £9,000 as it was before. So the actual ISA allowance is still at 9,000 and 20,000, depending on the type of ISA.
Okay, now what happened as regard non-DOM taxation? Maybe you can explain what that is as it currently stands, what it means, and what's going to happen to it in the future, Phil.
Yeah, a non-dom, that's someone who lives in a country but is not legally domiciled in it. In some cases, this means that someone may have sort of tax advantages by having that kind of status. So the non-dom tax regime, it's available to some UK residents with permanent domicile overseas, but that's to be abolished. So from April 2025, new arrivals to the UK, they won't have to pay tax on foreign income and gains for the first 4 years of their UK residency. But after that, they have to pay the same tax as other UK residents. There will be transitional arrangements in place, but that's kind of what's happening for the non-doms there.
What's to stop them? I mean, so they could come in, stay here for just under 4 years and then take off again, couldn't they?
I suppose in theory they could. It's something a lot of people do it. I mean, it tends to be like those that are really wealthy that'll kind of they try and bend the system, but try and work the rules to their
Sure,
advantage. But
sure.
I guess this is one of the measures they want to do to try and
Yeah.
close some of that loopholes.
Okay, and anything new on pensions, Phil?
Do you know, it was a quite a quiet budget for pensions. Pretty much the things for pensions had already been announced. So we already knew that the lifetime allowance for pensions, that comes in April. That had been announced previously. The other things were the state pension, and again, it was announced previously as well, but the state pension goes up by 8.5% in April. So that was just a couple of changes that we already knew about. But apart from that, it was quite a quiet budget for pensions.
And we mentioned the change in national insurance earlier. Was there anything in income taxation? I can never really remember either. I think this is where Scotland differs from the rest of the UK, isn't it?
Well, also for income tax, you've got what's called the income tax personal allowance. So that along with the higher rate of what you pay income tax on, they remain the same. So any earnings you've got under 12,570, don't pay tax on. And if you're over 50,270, that's when you start to pay the higher rate tax. If you're earning over 100,000, you start to lose some of the personal allowance at that point. But those rates, I think they were kept the same until April 2028. But one thing to bear in mind is that the rates and thresholds may differ for taxpayers in different parts of the UK where income tax is devolved. So like you say, in Scotland, some of the tax rates are different here as well.
There were a couple of things I think you might have mentioned before in a recent programme, which were maybe expected with regard to capital gains and dividend allowance. Take us through that if you can, please, Phil.
Yeah, so the dividend allowance, it reduces to just £500 from April 2024. And then the capital gains tax exemption, it reduces to £3,000. And again, that's from April 2024 as well. So that was things that we already knew about as well going into this budget.
One of the things we wondered about in terms of possibly being an election giveaway to a sort of Tory rump was whether anything would happen to inheritance tax, did it?
Not much happening there. So there's not good. One thing they did say is there is going to be a consultation on moving to like a residence-based regime for inheritance tax. But as things stand, there's no changes to IHT for the next sort of tax year. The bandings are still the same. So it's 325,000 is what's called the nil rate band. And then you've got what's called the main residence nil rate band. It's at 175,000, so they still remain as is. One thing that is quite good for inheritance tax from the 1st of April this year, personal representatives of estates, they no longer need to take out commercial loans to pay IHT before applying to obtain a grant on credit from HMRC. So that is a benefit to a lot of people there as well.
Anything else in the section of personal taxation, savings, and pensions that you picked up on and you want to mention?
Yeah, not really so much anything to do with, well, not really personal tax, but the national living wage for people over 23, so that's paid by employers, is rising from £10.42 an hour to £11.44 an hour, and that comes in April as well.
Okay, and property can often be quite a big one. Was it this time?
Yeah, I mean, the Chancellor announced the government's plans to make the property tax system what they believe to be fairer. So they're abolishing what's called the furnished holiday lettings tax regime. That's designed to try and help people in areas that are local buy properties rather than people buying up kind of like holiday homes to make a profit on. also abolishing stamp duty, land tax, multiple dwellings relief. That ends from the 1st of June 2024. So that applies in England and Northern Ireland. And we've got a reduction in the higher rate of capital gains tax on residential properties. That's from 28% to 24%. So that affects people who are higher earners that have got property that they dispose of and have a capital gain to pay on.
And what was said about public services in this budget, Phil?
Yeah, public services. So the Chancellor announced £2.5 billion funding boost for the NHS in the next tax year. So he wants that to try and allow for services to continue and to try and focus on reducing waiting times for patients. He also announced £800 million additional investment to boost productivity across other public services. So some of that things, there was £230 million for drones and new technology to free up police officers' time for frontline work, £75 million to roll out a violence reduction unit model across England and Wales, £170 million for the justice system, and that was to include £55 million for family courts, £100 million for prisons, and £50 million to reduce administrative burdens in the courts, £165 million to fund additional children's social care placements, and then an initial commitment of £105 million to build new special free schools. So quite a lot of different sort of spending things there as well.
It's amazing, isn't it? You can just talk about millions and millions and millions.
I know.
So it's like penny sweeties. Any other key points from the budget you think are worth mentioning?
Yeah, quite a few different things. So they're going to be introducing a new duty on vaping products. That's due to come in October 2026. Tobacco duty, it'll be increased from the same time, October 2026. Got air passenger duty adjustments to non-economy class rates. That's from 25, 26. That'll be one that'll impact me when I go on my holidays. You know how I like a holiday, John.
You've never mentioned that before, Phil.
I know. We've got energy profits levy, a one-year extension. I know in Aberdeen, that one's sort of not going down very well at all, but that'll continue until April 2029. So that's been extended. They're looking to boost local growth through the continuation of the investment zone programme. There's £1 billion in additional tax relief over the next 5 years for creative industries. There was also things like £120 million for the Green Industries Growth Accelerator, extension to Freeport tax relief. So there was a lot of different things kind of in the budget there. So that kind of covers all the main sort of key points, I would say.
Now, as we always do in your podcast, Phil, we check to see how this week's subject matter has affected your own journey in life, either personally, professionally, or both. So what have you got this week on the spring budget?
Yeah, what I was going to say here was more like when it comes to things like budgets, it's important to take professional advice before making any decisions relating to your personal finances. Everybody's impacted by budgets in different ways. It all depends on things like how much you're earning, what stage of life you're at. There's so many different factors to come into play here. Another thing that I would also just stress as well is that a different government can come in and change things as well. And also existing governments can change things. I mean, it's funny, just maybe about a week before the budget, they were saying that there was talk, but one of the things that they kind of leaked was that they were going to do this 99% mortgage scheme. So me thinking I was clever, I went online and bought a domain name, 99%mortgage.com. So I think I paid a couple of hundred quid for all these domains thinking, oh, great, these are going to be really good. And then a couple of days, a day or two before the budget, they turned around and said, no, we're not actually going to go ahead with it. So they probably leaked it. And then the feedback probably hadn't been that good. And they thought, oh, we'll just get to shelve this kind of idea. So the 99% mortgages, there was a U-turn before it even got announced. So I do always say it's good to take not just initial financial advice on anything, but also good to take ongoing financial advice. I'm always a great advocate and promoter of that.
Now, normally when you buy a domain name, you buy it for a certain period of time. How long did you buy those ones for, Phil?
Oh, I'm not sure. I think it's like a couple of years, but
well, you never know. You never know. It might come right yet. Could still pay off in the long run. I was going to say that. I mean, there are some things here that they've mentioned in this budget that, depending on whether there is a change in government, these things might never come into play because they're sort of down the road a little bit and they could be out of power by then, couldn't they?
That's it. I mean, they likely have an election at some point this year, and things can change. Different governments can come in with totally different ideas and philosophies. But that's why it's good to kind of have ongoing financial advice. So if things, I mean, we can only plan as things are at the moment. You can't speculate on things. You get people every year that'll say, oh, there's going to be changes to inheritance tax, or there's going to be changes to the tax relief on pensions. And then sometimes there are little tweaks here and there. And then there's other times where that all these experts have predicted things. That's why I never try and predict budgets, because other than things getting leaked beforehand, I mean, here was like the 99% mortgages, and a week later it was shelved. So it's hard to predict.
They do leak things to test them, and the other reason that they leak them is, the triple lock on the pensions is under threat, and then Jeremy Hunt rides in on a white horse and says, no, it's not, to make him look good. On the podcast, another regular bit we delve into is Phil's quote of the week, being a fan, as Phil is, of influential and motivational sayings and quotes. What do you have this week, Phil, on our subject of the spring budget?
Got one from Barack Obama today.
Okay.
Budget is more than just a series of numbers on a page. It is an embodiment of our values.
Now, Phil is really keen on trying to help you with your query, so if ever you want to email a question to us, please do. And as always, we can ask them anonymously if that's what you prefer. Let's get on to this week's contact details coming up. Give it to you after these. The first one is from Adele in Keith. Adele says, hi, Phil. I heard in the budget that there's a new ISA product coming onto the market from the government, allowing you to save up to £5,000 tax-free per year. Can you tell me, have I got this correct, and when will it be available?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and we never actually covered this when we went through the kind of British ISAs, they're called. So it was one of the flagship measures that was announced in the budget, but it's set to be delayed past the next general election. I know you couldn't make it up. There's some people saying that they think the policy might never be introduced, but we'll need to wait and see. But experts are sort of, some experts are saying it might come in, but it might not be until April 2025. But one of the things kind of after the budget was that the Treasury's kind of concluded that it's going to be quite expensive to kind of bring this in. So it's not, again, that might be a U-turn, who knows? But it looks as though it probably wouldn't happen in this calendar year. So if it does go ahead, it's probably more likely to be now in April 2025, they reckon. So again, just watch this space and see what happens.
And the reason it's quite expensive to implement is because you're taking out however many thousand, if not million, people who are saving £5,000 extra per time that would otherwise be taxable, and therefore has to be paid for in that regard, I assume.
Yeah, also like the administrative kind of burden of it as well. Partly for the government, but also all the providers need to update systems and things. And there's also, I've heard people saying that the financial regulator's got a thing called consumer duty. And again, some people are arguing, saying, well, this actually goes against like the principles of consumer duty. So I'd say sometimes you get an idea and they announce it, and sometimes U-turns, but I don't think it's going to be once. Certainly, from what they're saying now, they don't think that's the British ISA is going to come in as quickly as they perhaps thought.
Or suggested. Next up, here's one from Ian McVicker, who says, hi, Phil. In an effort to save monthly costs, I've stopped paying my fees for life insurance for now, as I really can't afford it. A friend says, if I have a mortgage, I legally have to have life insurance in place. Is this true?
No, you don't have to have life insurance if you've got a mortgage. Maybe years and years ago, lenders would insist that it was kind of compulsory at that point, but it's not anymore. What I would say is that it's probably a good time to sit down with a financial advisor to see if they can help with your budget. And they can also look at your needs for things like life insurance as well, because depending on your, I mean, if you've got a mortgage and kids and a partner or wife or husband, then it's kind of maybe more important to try and keep that going. I would also say check with your employer if you're employed, to see if you've any benefits such as death in service benefit. But again, the only downside with that is if someone has got that, if they then change employer, that could be a benefit that's gone. Also, if somebody's had any health issues, they might want to keep a policy going because they might not be able to replace it in the future. So I would certainly recommend for Ian that he sits down and has a look and kind of takes advice on that.
And I would just add to that, before you get in touch with a question, you might want to take a look at our back catalogue, because we've covered a lot of topics now. And we may have touched on what you're interested in. I'm John Mellis. Thanks for joining us for episode 170 of the UK Personal Finance Show with Phil Anderson. If you feel you need a helping hand with anything we've been discussing or anything else of a monetary matter, find Phil for Finance. Search Phil Anderson Financial Services online, or join the Facebook group for the show. Search Personal Finance Community. That's Personal Finance Community on Facebook. Phil's on Twitter and LinkedIn as well, or why not email Phil a question he can answer on a future show. His address is phil@philandersonfinancial.co.uk. That's phil@philandersonfinancial.co.uk. Send him your question, and like I say, Phil could be answering it in an upcoming podcast. And please be assured, we won't use your real name if that's how you prefer it. Remember, if you found this useful, please rate and recommend us. Please follow us on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. That way you'll get us every episode with the info you want when you need it. You get all the links you need on Phil's social media. Good luck with your money. Phil's doing his best to help make that cash go further. We'll see you next time, and thanks for listening.